and a very warm welcome back to Wellness with Liz Earle. And today I am joined by fellow TV presenter and radio broadcaster Gabby Roslin, whose remarkable career has seen her presenting The Big Breakfast, Children in Need, the National Lottery, and even busting food myths as part of the Food Inspectors team. Alongside all of that, Gabby is a true well-being warrior, campaigning for a number of charities, including Breakthrough Breast Cancer and Well Child, and is vocal about the importance of eating well. So perfect. Welcome, yes. Gabby.
Thank you. What a joy to be here.
Well, it's so funny sitting in front of a microphone with you, because usually it's the other way around. I'm with you in BBC Radio London.
Yeah, but I actually love being interviewed by people, because it's nice to be the other side sometimes. Yes. And also when it's a friend and somebody you admire. So for me, it's a joy to be here.
Oh, well, bless you. Thank you. Can we start with your broadcasting? Because so many of those listening in will know you so well from all those programmes that I mentioned. How did all that start? How did you get into it in the first place?
I walked past the very first building that I worked in, because I walk everywhere, which we'll talk about in a minute. But mm-hmm. I walked past there the other day and realised it's 32 years ago this October that I started in TV. And it's a very strange thought, but I can't ever remember a time when I didn't do it, and also a time that I didn't want to do it, because I was 3 years old when I knew that's what I wanted to do.
Were you interviewing people with a hairbrush microphone?
Well, my father worked at BBC as a broadcaster, and so I used to go with him to Television Centre, and I used to hold his hand and say, Daddy, Daddy, this is what I want to be when I'm a grown-up. And I knew it. Mm. And then we used to watch Blue Peter going out, and I thought, that's what I want to do. And I used to walk in with him, and I'd have my eyes closed, and he'd lead me in, and I'd imagine that the people at reception were saying, "Oh, Gabby Roslin, you're dressing room number one." And I used to just pretend. And then Swap Shop started, which shows my age. And then I realised I wanted to do Saturday morning telly. So when I did that, that was incredible. But when I first went to the BBC as a presenter, and they said, "Oh, Gabby Roslin, your dressing room's down there." I went into the dressing room and I bawled my eyes out.
That is such an amazing story.
Because it happened.
Absolute. I know. What do they call that when you project something and then it becomes a reality? You know, there are whole sort of studies on that, aren't there?
Saying it out to the universe. But it wasn't. It was just, you know what it was? It was a wish and a dream. And that's what I tell my children. Have wishes, have dreams, have hopes, but don't hurt anybody in the process, which is what my parents said to me. Absolutely. Mm. If this is what you want to do, go and do it. Just don't hurt anybody.
Be kind. Yeah. That's what I always say to my children. Yeah. Always be a little bit kinder than necessary.
Yes.
You know, kindness is something that is so crucial. We ought to have kindness lessons, really. I love those random acts of kindness that you hear about when people leave little notes for people or do somebody a favour.
Pay it forward.
Yeah. That's a very good rationale. But you've obviously seen a lot of changes. I remember I started in daytime TV, it'll be 30 years ago this year.
You're a youngster.
Well, exactly. You've got 2 years on me. But there have been so many changes, haven't there? And I think one of the big things that we've seen in our field is probably the rise of social media and communicating with people. Yeah. You're very big on social media, aren't you? Your Instagram is great.
I have fun with it. I think it's very interesting.
You can tell that. It's very lively.
Well, I was out last night with somebody who, he's brilliant brain. I can say who it was. It was Judge Rinder. So Robert Rinder's a friend of mine.
Yeah, I saw your Instagram. Yeah.
And we were having a conversation about television and saying that in the days, I suppose, when I started, that there were four channels and that everybody, there was a more immediacy to television. Television was your friend, your companion. Now people can walk around with that friend, companion, whatever they want to call it. But also it's now become so judgmental. And I know I've spoken to you about this. I loathe people being so judgmental about everything. And it's very fast. It's very quick to do it.
And it's that mob mentality. And actually, it's quite interesting you should say that, because something popped up on the Dreaded Mail online this morning and I was misquoted. And
You surprised me.
Well, yeah, tell me something that nobody knows. You know, and these things, they come out of nowhere. And I had no idea that they were going to, you know, write a feature about something. And I have had no opportunity to actually speak to any journalist or say, actually, do you know what? I didn't actually say that. And then even, you know, by 8 o'clock in the morning, there are scores of comments saying, oh, silly cow, you know, silly woman saying that. And of course, you think you want to scream at it and say, but I did not say that.
But people
believe it because it's written.
Yes. And it still worries me to this day that people still believe what's written. And I think with that is the upside of social media, that Scott Mitchell has, of course, come out this morning, and Barbara and Scott are very, very dear friends of mine. And he made the very brave decision and very strong decision to come out and tell everybody now about Barbara's Alzheimer's. And it's thank goodness he's done it, because trying to keep something like that hidden has been very painful for them. But so immediately there was a reaction and a strong, and so I put something out before anyone could call me, because everybody knows that we're friends, before any paper could quote me or anything. I put something out on Twitter. Now, anyone can quote that, anyone can use that, but those are my words. In the same as Instagram, I can make a comment about something or I can write about, and as I do, as I said, with Instagram, I do it all for fun. And you can, so at least that way.
There is, you're there absolutely is right. You've got the right of redress immediately to anybody immediately. And say, actually, do you know what? I didn't say that. This is what I really think.
And you should do that. Put it out there. Let them know.
But then when it's something small, you just think, oh, it's so petty. You know, should we always be looking at looking after our backs?
And but lies aren't right.
No, they're
lies
not.
Lies are wrong.
Even small ones. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I shall get onto it. You talked about well-being a lot. I know we've done lots of interviews together. And is your family history and your family background influential in your views on well-being and eating well and living
absolutely.
Well?
Absolutely. It's funny enough, it goes back to before both my parents had cancer. So 22 years ago, my father was diagnosed with bowel cancer. And then my mother had scleroderma, which is a very rare disease. It's in the joints, and it's horrible. It's very horrible. And she also had a blood clot on the lung, and so she was on warfarin and in and out of hospital, but the blood clot was hiding the tumor, so she had cancer of the lung, smoking related. And we didn't know that she had cancer until she died a year later. And so there was a lot of stuff going on then, but I did find out a lot about complementary therapies. I don't like the word alternative, because they're not. I think they complement.
They complement. Yeah.
Because I found out I also had allergies. So I found out about my gluten, my wheat allergy. I've got a proper wheat allergy. And I found out about that years earlier. So it had been a gradual build-up. But then obviously with Dad's bowel cancer, I've studied health, nutrition and fitness, I suppose, for 22 years. I don't have any letters after my name. And I was asked recently in a chat about a TV show. They said, oh, yes, you're a nutritionist and a health expert and all of this, but where did you do your course? And I said, well, I read everything possible. Yes. They said, well, then you're not an expert. I said, I've never, ever said I'm an expert. No. All I say is that I read a lot about it. I retain information. I know I'm wrong on some things. I know I'm right on some things. I wish people would listen more to people like you, to people like Amelia Freer, Dale Pinnock, people I respect.
Love Dale.
Adore these people.
Did a podcast with him.
He's wonderful.
So knowledgeable.
He knows his stuff.
Yeah, and he's a real expert. You know, he's a real academic. Yeah. I get a similar question. People say, well, you know, where did you train or where did you study? But I'm a writer, principally. Mm. So I'm a writer and a porter and a researcher. So I write books, and when I write books, I then interview the experts and the academics. And then, and I always make sure in my books, actually, that I put all the clinical references in so that you can fact check, because I do want medics to pick them up, and rather than just say, oh, you know, this is a bit dismissive. I did one recently on menopause, and I wanted, you know, any GP to be able to pick it up and refer to the references and the NICE guidelines and all of those things.
That's very important.
But I wouldn't say that I was a nutritionist, or certainly not a dietitian.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to, you know, as you say, to research and to know
works
for you. Was your father's bowel cancer, was that related to diet?
I think it was. I come from a Jewish family where food is very much the centre of
feasting
everything.
Feasting and family. And
But interestingly, if you go back to... He was brought up in Africa, in Zimbabwe, which then was southern Rhodesia. And it was a very natural diet. Mm. So I think that possibly all changed when he was a student. He came here at 17 and went to RADA. And I think that people weren't as knowledgeable, but in those early days, my mother was evacuated to a farm. Everything was very simple. We're going back to simple food now. So I don't know where the rubbish happened. I believe it was in the low-fat, bringing in of all the low-fat stuff. in probably was it late 50s and 60s that was all brought in, and so it's high sugar, the fat. I mean, I remember my parents eating. My mother used to make. Oh, she was a dreadful cook, but she used to make deep fried salami and chips and things at home that were made at home. But it was very basic what we had. So I think it was. I don't think my father was a particularly healthy eater. He liked to eat a lot. Who's going to know? We're never going to know.
No, it is. It's one of those very difficult things. It's like when people talk about breast cancer. I know you've lost many friends to breast cancer and you're a campaigner for breast cancer research. And it's that awful statistic of 1 in 8 women being diagnosed with breast cancer, which is terrifying.
One in eight
is just shocking.
And people must go. You know what? The interesting thing is I still have girlfriends. And we're in our 50s and I have girlfriends who say, oh, I don't want to go for a mammogram. And the very first one I went for, I've told you, I had a scare and I didn't know. And I'd introduced the man who was looking at the radiographer, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
And so I had my mammogram and she said, if you could wait outside, I think you're going to see this gentleman. And I thought, why am I going? And she said, you've got very dense breasts, which nobody ever talks about either. I didn't know I did. I know that I had big boobs, but I didn't know they were dense.
Dense.
And I went in and he said, right, we can see something. If I may, I'm going to give you a biopsy instantly. But I've done this for many years and I can tell you, I think it's absolutely fine, but we're going to do this. And it just turned into some sort of weird film because a week earlier I'd interviewed him on stage and introduced him. Saying this is the leading expert radiographer and this man knows everything. And because we were doing a lunch to raise money for my for a Future Dreams charity, because that's the one that my two friends who have died of breast cancer, mother and daughter. It was all, what on earth is going? He's now having a biopsy of my breast.
On you.
2 weeks later. Thank goodness, 24 hours later, I found everything was absolutely fine. Mm. But I was terrified for those 24 hours.
Yeah.
But I just remind everybody, please, please go. Yes, it's not comfortable,
but it's
just
fine.
Go.
And yes.
Go.
Yes. So wait, at what age did you start having mammograms?
I think it was 49.
Yes, I think that's the right age, isn't it? Sort of 49, 50. And menopause, is that big in your life as a feature?
No, do you know what? I'm one of those people.
One of the lucky ones.
It didn't affect me, I suppose. I became moody. I suppose my kids would say I became moody and lost my temper. But I feel fitter now than I have ever done. Mm. And I, excuse me, I said to my husband on the phone driving here that it's such a waste. You know, isn't it the wonderful quote that youth is wasted on the young? It's such a waste to have learnt all of this now. Why didn't I know it in my 20s? Although I wouldn't have listened. But why didn't I know it in my 20s that exercise and healthy eating and cutting down on booze and all of those things actually make you feel really good?
Yeah, so much better.
Oh my goodness.
I'm really interested to hear you talk about fat and the you know, the how we shouldn't be revering low fat, because my very first book, Vital Oils, was all about good quality fat.
Yes,
and
we've
that
got
was
to have those.
Nearly 30 years ago now. And I think we're just slowly beginning to realise, aren't we, that it's not about fat. And obviously things like trans fats and hydrogenated fats are not good. But the good, healthy fats, the avocado and the nuts and the seeds
eggs.
And the olive oil and exactly high fat foods are so good for us and so beneficial and make things like hormones and, you know, healthy blood fats. And then it's the sugars, the refined carbs, that are the real baddies.
What I find extraordinary is that the people will still buy prepackaged processed food, which is actually more expensive, is bad for you, and takes just as long to cook as if. And I mean, I'm hoping that my oldest daughter goes off to university next year. That's going to be a strange thing to go through. But she knows that throw some vegetables into a pan with a bit of tamari and a bit of sesame oil. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. Throw those in a pan with a bit of quinoa and you've got a really cheap meal. You've got a super healthy meal. And actually, I don't know if she'll keep to that being a student. I doubt it. Who does, really? But all of those things are really important. And the amount of sugar, when you look at people sitting in fast food restaurants and they forget, and they'll say, but I'm not having sugar. You are.
You don't realize.
You're having white buns. You're having white rice.
That is just sugar.
That's sugar.
Yeah.
Pure sugar. And they say, no, it's rice. Rice is good for you. No, it's not. If you get brown rice or wild rice, and if you also, if you, as we now know, if you cool it down and you have it the next day, 50% lower in sugar. A wonderful book by Michael Mosley.
That's amazing, isn't it? You know all about
your gut health as well. That's your big thing.
Yeah, and so my resistant starch.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
So if anybody isn't aware of that, if you cook your rice or your pasta or your potatoes even, and then you let them go cold and eat them the next day. So things like cold potato salad or sushi rice, for example. So lots of cultures. Or you can reheat it, actually.
Reheat it as well, you don't even have to have it cold.
Then you take out the sugar because it turns into this resistant starch that the body doesn't absorb. Such a simple tip.
So, and incredible. But for years we've
been told not to...
excuse me, it's the trees outside. That we've been told not to reheat rice because rice you can get
botulism if you keep it for too long, definitely. Yeah. But if you cool it really quickly and keep it in the fridge and use it next day, then you're absolutely fine. How did you discover that you had a wheat allergy?
Actually, all my life up until finding out, I couldn't breathe. I didn't ever breathe through my nose, so. I just lived on breathing through my mouth and tissues in my palm of my hand, and I never could breathe very well. So my nose would run constantly, and it is now, but that's for another reason. That's for dry eye, which I'll tell you about.
So
as a child, I just had I talked like that all the time, and I had a blocked nose.
And not very good for a broadcaster.
No, and I didn't know what it was. I knew I was allergic to cats. Very allergic to cats and allergic to feather pillows.
You still are?
Yes, but actually less than now finding out about the wheat because, of course, my resistance is higher because, I don't need to say all of it to you because you know, but obviously your listeners might want to know about that. But so then I was tested and they said to me, in those days, it's a long time ago, they said to me, yes, you're allergic to cats and feathers. And you've got hay fever. And I said, yeah, I know that, but there's something else. And it was before people knew about all of these things. And I thought, what do I do? And I then read something about the Hale Clinic. And I went along to the Hale Clinic and I went to the reception. I said, I'd like to see somebody because I know I'm allergic to something and I don't know what it is. And they said, okay, we have a wonderful woman here who does Qigong and is a nutritionist and a naturopath and a herbalist. So I said, lovely, I'd like to see her, please. And they said, okay, well, she has an appointment tomorrow. I said, okay. Great. I didn't know what I was going into.
Didn't know what they were talking about.
I walked in to see her. Belinda was her name. Gosh, I was 25, so it's 26, 27 years ago. And I went to see her and she said to me, oh, you have a wheat allergy.
Just by looking at you?
Just by looking at me.
Extraordinary.
So I said to her, how do you know? Because I'm always questioning. I question everybody. As an interviewer, I question everybody.
Of course.
And she said, I can tell by all of the symptoms, everything you've said. And I used to be, I used to swell up at night. I used to go to bed every single night of my life with a hot water bottle. I didn't know that you didn't go to bed with a hot water, didn't not go to bed with a hot water bottle, as it were, because I had stomach aches, really excruciating stomach aches and a blocked nose. Anyway, she said, for 2 weeks, I want you to cut out everything with wheat, but specifically wheat. So I said, okay. And she said, and look at every food label. And when I started to do that, I realised that most things, I mean, I had cereal in the morning, I had maybe a sandwich while I was running around for lunch, suddenly realised that everything that I consumed had wheat in it. And within 3 days, I could breathe for the first time in my life. I didn't have a stomach ache. And then, obviously, 2 weeks later, she then said, oh, this is very interesting now, can you try it again? When I took it again, I was doubled over in pain for 24 hours with severe pain.
Really?
So much so that I was screaming agony and I couldn't breathe again and I became wheezy. It was awful. It was absolutely awful.
Isn't that extraordinary? And that's something that the medical world couldn't pick up.
No, because they never did. So then I went and had myself tested and it came up as a huge lump. So I found out I was allergic to wheat. And since then, obviously it's a long time ago now, since then I've tested other things the same. Mm. And I would say I haven't had a celiac test, but I wouldn't be surprised if I am celiac because I have a minor reaction to other glutens.
Do you?
So I've become wheezy. I have to be careful with some wines as well. So I become slightly wheezy. Well, it depends in the process,
how they're refined.
Yeah. So I just have to...
What about things like oats? Can you have oats and porridge? Because I know some people can't.
Well, I did for years. And I then decided to see what it was like to cut them out. And it's definitely made a difference. Mm. It doesn't make me ill, but it makes me sluggish. Whereas porridge, I know that it's a smart drug. It's wonderful. Porridge is wonderful. And for it certainly gave me energy, made me last all day. I could walk a marathon on it. But I've taken myself off that. I'm in the morning, I have eggs and avocado and sauerkraut and kefir. I make my own kefir, which is my first thing I have.
Do you? That's so fab.
Soya kefir. Yeah. My husband makes his own, well, I make it for him, coconut kefir or almond milk kefir because he has eczema and asthma, so he doesn't have dairy.
So, okay, interesting.
We have, that, as the kids say, you open up our fridge and
it's all there. It's literally moving.
Off milk here and off milk there. And, yeah.
I was reading, actually, researching for an article we're going to do in the magazine in a few months' time, and it was about fermented juices.
Yes.
And this was, you know, you take your juice and you have your beetroot and your carrot and whatever. Well, this is, you keep it for a month.
Oh, really?
And then, yes, and then you're drinking fermented juices. Fizzy. Well, it will be really fizzy, so we're going to try it. So anyway, we've got all these sort of fermented juices, and I'm having to say to people, no, please don't throw that out. It hasn't gone off. Well, it probably has gone off, you know, technically, but it's gone off for a reason. It's fermenting all these beneficial bugs.
I listen to you, see. It's my kefir is you. Primarily, it was you going on about it. And also, my husband has acupuncture, and the acupuncturist told him to have it.
Kefir is just so amazing. If anybody hasn't stumbled across kefir yet, and it is growing, you're finding it in more and more supermarkets, it is this like a super yogurt, isn't it? It's like this sort of liquid fermented milk. And I make mine with local cow's milk, but you can make it with goat's milk or sheep's milk or coconut milk or whatever. And it's unbelievably good for you. And I think it is addictive. I think our microbes tell us that need it. You know, I feel myself craving it. And I almost picture these little microbes, like little minions in my stomach going, feed me kefir because I need it now.
But I haven't had dairy forever because actually I didn't like it as a child and also made me more blocked up.
Yeah.
I don't like dairy. I don't like anything dairy. Mm. I really don't. But I have this craving for my soy kefir in the morning.
Yeah. Interesting, my son, my eldest son, who's 25, he was always slightly lactose intolerant as a child. And again, you know, very similar symptoms to you. He was quite wheezy, blocked up, a lot of ear infections, which is so common in childhood. And I took him off lactose quite early on. And back then it was really hard. You know, I used to find the occasional packet of rice milk, but that was it. Yes. I mean, there just was no almond milk or soya milk or whatever. And that made a big difference. But now I give him kefir. And I gave him dairy kefir because the beneficial bacteria in the kefir will digest the lactose.
Well, that's what my husband wants to do.
And he can have that now.
He wants to try it out for his eczema and asthma because I've taken him off all dairy.
It'd be very interesting to see.
Oh, yes, maybe.
That is what they say, that if your kefir is properly fermented, that's what the bacteria are living on. So they've pre-digested the lactose, so you can actually have it. So we shall see. And certainly my eldest daughter, Lily, who also went through a problem with gluten and wheat, since repopulating her gut bacteria, she can now reintroduce it and she can have bowls of pasta and, you know, not every day, but she can have it occasionally and not blow up.
The interesting thing was I realised that it was probably more when everyone became obsessed with spelt. So I thought, great, I have spelt
bread.
Try
that instead, yeah.
And I had it and it was delicious, but it just made me... Was it a bit wheezy and a bit stomachache, but not like it bad.
Now you talk about running and walking.
I don't run.
Do you not? Well,
no.
Look at your Instagram. You're always in trainers.
Always, because I walk everywhere.
Ah, okay. Walking trainers.
I love these. Yes, I walk everywhere.
But I've seen you at the marathon. Did you walk it? Or were you
no,
there,
I didn't.
Just,
no, I haven't
just,
been at the
just
marathon.
Just there supporting it.
No, never, 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 ever.
Maybe it was a fun run.
Oh, I've been, yes, I've done fun runs, and I've done a couple of sport relief mile runs and things.
Yeah.
But I'm not. I've never ever been a runner. Walking is the most incredible thing, and I read obviously again another. I wanted to research why I love it so much, and apparently you can become addicted to fresh air. And I thought of
How
all
fabulous.
The addictions.
Let's have that one.
I'm going to have that one. But it's very interesting. Apparently that's what runners and walkers have.
Yeah.
And if I don't do it, I become yeah. itch. I can't explain. It's I crave it. And so I managed last week. So every day I think I probably do about 7 miles.
Do you walk to work? Can you walk to the BBC?
It's an hour and 40 minutes for me. So that's how I start. And then most of my work is in town. So I'll start at maybe go to Broadcasting House at Oxford Circus. I'll go into Soho. I'll then go over to ITV on the South Bank and then come back. The other day I walked 7.5 miles in one go.
Do you have a tracker? Do you keep track?
I have my Fitbit.
And it tells you.
I love it.
Isn't it so satisfying to look at it?
Oh my goodness. And my Fitbit, I think that's what's tipped me into that because I want it. And I bought it for the kids as well. They've got sort of kids ones that we found
I did
online.
The same. I gave my daughter one for her birthday.
And
She's
I thought
15.
It was. And everyone said to me, oh, you shouldn't do that. That's too young. No. And the kids love it.
Yeah,
and my youngest
is
very sporty. My oldest isn't. She's lower six. So she's exam mode.
Yeah, similar.
But it's really, I think it's great. I love that we're getting out and about. But I need somewhere to go. So I'm not a walker as in, I love to go. I do love the countryside. Oh, don't get me wrong. I love to go for a country walk, but I can't do it. So for me, I like to know I've got to be there and I've got to be there. And then I've got to be there and I've got to be there. I've got an hour. I've got 50 minutes to get there. I've got whatever. Mm. And I stop. I look. I've got 3 shows at the moment that I've devised whilst I'm working, that one of which is about to start going out. Another one, which is we're piloting. And these are all from walking and looking around and seeing that the sky is blue.
I read a really interesting study that was at Stanford University that showed that 20 minutes of walking outdoors dramatically boosts brain creativity.
Yes.
And it was very interesting because they also compared it. They did a trial against walking on a treadmill because initially the researchers thought, oh, well, it's just being active. It's just having more oxygen going around and circulating around your brain. But it is that outdoors.
I read something
and
about
you are
2
living
weeks
proof.
Ago. About treadmills versus outdoor.
Yeah, treadmills are good for aerobic and getting you moving.
Well,
and
I go to the gym as well. So for me, I'll go to the, take the kids to school, go to the gym, then start walking.
And what do you do in the gym that's different then? Are you doing weights?
Yeah, I do weights. I do, because it's important at our age, of course, as well, to have weights, weight bearing exercise. Squats, weights, I do HIIT. So I'll do TRX. So if people don't know.
So is that like a big elastic band?
Yeah, it's something that you tie onto a bar or you tie onto a door and you use your own body weight to pull yourself. So rowing, press up type things. It's called TRX and it's very simple. You don't need machinery for it. You just need a band, basically.
Yeah.
It's not elasticated. It's a firm band.
Yeah.
So I do that. I do rowing machine because I had a trapped nerve in my neck. So I couldn't do... I love doing upper body workout, but I had to be careful for a year. It's now fixed, thank goodness. Went to a wonderful osteopath. But so I had to do a lot of upper and lower back exercises.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. I do know a lot about fitness because I've been trained and I've read and I've learned. So that's another thing I'm passionate about.
It's interesting how women, as they get older, can actually be fitter. I think
I
look better now in my 50s than I did in my 40s because I'm fitter.
I feel fitter. Yeah.
I have more energy and sleep better and weight bearing and even walking actually is weight bearing. Weight bearing doesn't mean to say you've
you
got
have
to lift
weights.
I remember talking to that lovely Baker, ex-model now, Baker, brilliant, and TV presenter, Lorraine Pascal.
She's lovely.
Isn't she great? And I love her Instagram as well. And she lifts the most extraordinarily heavy weights. And when you meet her, she's this little
tiny,
almost quite fragile, obviously very tall, but incredibly slender, but super strong.
Mm.
And she was talking about the importance of weights. And when she travels, because she's doing a lot of TV work in the States, she has these inflatable weights that I keep meaning
Does
to get.
Does she fill them with water?
Water or sand. And you can travel with them. You can like flat pack weights. Isn't that clever?
That's so funny.
and then, you know, carry on doing, you know, wherever you are, if you're staying with a friend or in a hotel bedroom.
But it's interesting, the other day, because I do, so Fitbit also has a, I feel like I'm not, this isn't freebie either.
You're not an ambassador for Fitbit.
I am absolutely not. And I don't do that sort of thing. I'm sure
other trackers are available.
Yes, there are other trackers. but on this one particular one that I have, it also has a hit. So it does a 10
high
minute.
High intensity.
Yes, which right. I love. Mm. And I think I've always done it and I didn't know it was so good for me. And now everybody's this whole thing about.
So
I've
what
only
do you
ever
do
go
as
to,
part of your hit?
So I'll do a 7 minute workout or I'll do a 10 minute. And I love a 7 minute quick workout if I haven't got time. So I'll do everything. It starts with, I like doing step up. So at the bottom of the stairs at home, I'll do really fast up and down, but as fast as I can for a minute. Then I'll do a plank, and a plank is one of the greatest exercises you can do for your core.
I did Pilates
for years. I did yoga for years and Pilates. I love Pilates. Pilates is good for your body, and yoga is good for your brain, your mind, rather. Yeah. And so I do that, and then I do Superman pose. So it's like in a push up. Staying in the push-up position, and then I do my legs. I bring my knees into my chest.
Oh, is that what they call burpees?
And the burpees are where you jump up, then you go down. It's horrible.
Absolutely killer.
It's horrible.
But the great thing about HIIT is that you time it, and so you think it's only 1 minute.
Yeah.
It's 60 seconds. I can do this.
And I'm exhausted by the end of it.
And then, you know, you've done the whole body workout in seven minutes, and then you get on with your day, you get on with your life.
And it's great. It's really good.
And no excuse to say, there's no time, I can't do it,
I want people to be careful, because I think the other thing is that I do worry that people, if they don't know what they're doing, that they're suddenly, they'll download an app, a 10-minute app or a 15-minute app. And they'll think, oh, this is for me. Please, if you're going to do this, go to the doctor first. Check your heart's okay.
That's
check
a really good plan. Get yourself kitted out, you know, health-wise, checked by the doctor. And there are also great YouTubers and professional coaches online that you can watch.
Superb ones.
So you can see the technique. And I have a big mirror in my bedroom at home, and I do my workouts in front of that and always sort of try and check alignment and make sure I'm standing straight and shoulders down and pelvis tucked under and all of that to avoid injuries.
I've had injuries. I had two bad shoulders. I had to have two shoulder operations separately, sort of a few years apart, because of bad positioning of myself in yoga.
So what would you say now in your 50s, looking ahead for the next, I don't know how many more decades you're going to be in broadcast?
Please?
Okay, 50. So this is the second half. what are you going to be focusing on in terms of well-being and fitness for the next half of
for
your life?
For me personally or for work-wise?
Yeah, no, for you personally.
For me personally.
What's going to be
carrying
keeping
on
you going?
Walking. Family, actually. You know, it's really funny. We on Bank Holiday Monday, everybody was saying, oh, what did you do? Oh, we went out with lots of people, we did. And actually, the four of us were just at home and we had a barbecue at home, and I did meat, I was going to say mealies, because we call them mealies, corn on the cob and asparagus on the barbecue and some tofu. And that's what we had. And we all sat around in we've got a teeny weeny garden because we're in London and we're very lucky to have a garden. We just sat outside, the four of us, and we played Uno and we played Tetris Jenga. And I just thought, I love this. I love that.
How old are your kids?
16 and 11, two girls. And my dad as well, who's in his 80s. He's 83.
So multi-generational all together. Very Mediterranean, actually, if you look at, you know, Southern
Big
France
salad on the
Italians.
Table that I picked out all day because I love it when it goes soggy. It's that sort of
thing. Soggy
salad. Oh, I love it when the apple cider vinegar soaks properly into the
And
lettuce.
Apple cider vinegar, of course, very good for your gut bacteria.
My husband has that before he eats every meal. He has a...
And has that helped? I know it can help with things like acid reflux too.
Yeah, he has acid. He had it. Yeah,
there you go. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Well, we could chat all day, but thank you so much,
thank
Gabby.
You.
It's real, real pleasure to have you here. And if you haven't already, do click subscribe to make sure the next episode is downloaded safely onto your phone or tablet. As always, we will put all the ideas and links that we've mentioned today over on lizellewellbeing.com, and we'll try and put a few gut-friendly recipes on there as well.
I just wanted to mention dry eye.
Dry eye. Oh, my goodness.
Please, may I
tell us
it?
About dry eye, only and then we can include it.
Only because, sorry to interrupt you, but only because so many, when I put it out on Twitter, I cannot get over the response I had. And dry eye syndrome, or blepharitis, is so many millions of people have it and people don't talk about it.
I have blepharitis too.
Well, there we go.
So how do you treat yours?
Well, I decided, you know, it's got to be non-preservative eye drops. I decided not to use those. I use my glasses. But at night, it can be so painful when I'm at the theatre. I can't see what's happening on stage sometimes. But I'm going to have... This isn't an advert either.
Okay, this is not an ad.
But I'm going to have something called Lippi Flow.
What is that?
Which I've been told about is from America. And I've been reading a lot about it, and I think it's Optical Express do it. And it's they massage your eyelids because it's the actual glands. And I've seen the inside, I've seen the x-rays and everything. And it's the oil's not produced anymore. So that's why tears just drop out without the oil. And I'm going to have this done next week.
Is it one treatment or do you go for lots of
one for 12 minutes.
And they massage your eyelids for 12 minutes.
And they put a cup over your eyelid, over your eyeball, and they put something to numb. I know it sounds, but you know what? If I don't have to be in pain anymore.
Yes.
And it's horrible. It's really painful. And the amount of people that have now spoken to me about it and said, thank you for talking about it. Nobody discusses this. I've tried complementary therapy drops. I've tried everything pure. I've done every single thing. So I'm going to go for this and I'll put it on Twitter and Instagram because
we'll add that onto the podcast notes and your results of how you found it. What works for me is using a hot compress.
I have that. I have the iPad.
So that's what I use. Okay.
But I'm not very good at sitting still. And it goes cold.
And it does go cold after, and it takes a minute or so and then it's cold again.
Yeah. No, I got an eye bag that I was told to get, a silk one. It feels very nice lying in the bath doing that, but I'm not. I get impatient.
Yeah. Well, I should be very interested to hear. So thank you. And that genuinely is all we have time for today. So thank you, as always. Do click on subscribe to make sure the next episode is downloaded, as I said before. If you can, do leave us a review, as it really helps other people find the show. And it's so great to be able to share so many of these well-being and wellness hints and tips. On lizellewellbeing.com, you can sign up to our weekly newsletter if you like, where we put recipe ideas and behind the scenes pictures and event tickets and all sorts of things. So until the next time we chat, go well. Bye bye.